We're going to talk as we go on about different aspects of the Holy Name and so on, and the potency of the Holy Name. So that'll come up more when we get to the fifth defense, sixth defense, like that, how powerful the Holy Name is. Okay, so now we're still going through the first defense. We talked about different types of qualities, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's explanation. Now, we've also written up on the board here, you see on this side, four types of blasphemy. And we want you to know this, please, for the test. There are four main types of blasphemy. This is according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. You just write them down. That you blaspheme or you criticize someone, make some funny remarks about a devotee because of their birth. You know, I'm sure you can all imagine what sorts of things people might say like that. Birth or background, you know, what sort of history the person had prior to Krishna consciousness. Then the devotee, in the course of trying to practice Krishna consciousness, sometimes devotees get into trouble and they may break a principle somehow, or just somehow or other get into some difficulty. So accidental fall down, we shouldn't hold that against them, that, oh yeah, him, you know, I remember what he did 5 years ago. That sort of thing. Last, traces of previous sin. Like, just to give you an example, I think it's quite a good example, that when Srila Prabhupada took Krishna consciousness to America, and so many American boys and girls became devotees, then went to Europe, and so Krishna consciousness was spreading in the Western world, and Prabhupada then took, after some years, took some of the devotees to America, I mean to India, and the caste Brahmins and so many people there, because they, I mean, actually they're in certain respects much better mannered and much more cultured in certain respects. And, you know, the American boys and girls are a little loud sometimes, you know, and sometimes eat with the left hand and things like that, which matter. I mean, we should learn about these things if we don't know them already. But they're not big, big, big things, as we mentioned, for someone who's really attached to Krishna. But the caste Brahmins, some caste Brahmins and others there in India, they notice some of these things. You know, a little, you could say, grossness, something like that. And so they thought this was quite bad. And Srila Prabhupada, he noted that, and he really didn't appreciate that. So, last traces of previous sin. Because of previous sin, one is born in a sinful family and has sinful habits and gets brought up in an environment which encourages that. But then if they take to Krishna consciousness wholeheartedly, then we shouldn't hold that against them. So that's the sort of thing we mean by last traces of previous sin. And there's one amusing incident I'm sure you've heard of, where some of those devotees on that first visit, they were in Vrindavan and they went to one of the main temples there, what we call the caste Goswami temples. They're, the people who run it are disciples, are descendants of disciples of the six Goswamis. And they've adopted the name or term Goswami as their family name. Yeah. So anyway, a couple of our devotees were there watching the arati in one of these temples, and the pujari was doing the arati and saw they were there, and then he went and offered them something and they received it nicely, and they were behaving very well. Yeah. And that pujari was quite surprised that they were well-mannered, and, you know, they interacted in a, like, gentle way like that. So in the end he came and said, oh, you are such nice devotees. You carry on like this, and in your next lives, you can be born in a family like this, and you can offer arati on the altar here. So the devotees, anyway, they didn't really know what to say, but they went back to Srila Prabhupada and told Srila Prabhupada that this is what the man had said. And Srila Prabhupada said, so, well, what was your reply? And they said, well, we didn't really. We just heard what he said. Prabhupada said, you should have told him that if you carry on offering arati so nicely like this, then in your next life, you can take birth in ISKCON. Yeah, Prabhupada said that. So, you know, all these things about... I remember I've had personal experience debating with the Brahmins, some Brahmins in Jagannath Puri. Yeah. One of the Brahmins who, you know, they have traditional services there, so this particular one, or there's two or three of them, but the main one, he was one of the main pujaris who dresses Lord Jagannath. And, you know, and he was, you know, on a certain level, he was quite friendly. And you wouldn't think he was the sort of person that if you walked into his temple, he'd kick you out or get the guards to come and hit you with a stick. So we asked, well, you know, can we come in? And he said, no, no. And we asked, why not? And then, you know, we'd been discussing on the basis of scripture. And he was acknowledging, yes, yes, this and that. And he said, because you've eaten cow. So he wouldn't let us in. So, you know, this falls into this category here. Well, maybe it's number one. Oh, no, number four. Number four. Or number one. I mean, it's sort of like connected with them. So, sins prior to becoming a devotee, and so on. So these are four types of blasphemy, which if you do them, yeah, it's not very good. It's very bad. So you please note those. And we're going to ask you about those in the test. Next thing is, oh, we mentioned about Krishna's explanation in Bhagavad Gita number 3. Well, that's related to what we were talking about earlier about, in fact, it's related really to blasphemy number 2. Yeah. Apichet sudaracharo bhajate mam ananyabhak. Sadur eva samantavya samyavyava satohisa. And Krishna is saying, the translation is there, I think, yes. Even if one commits the most abominable action, if he's engaged in devotional service, he's to be considered saintly because he's properly situated in his determination. So even if someone does something really bad, a devotee, but they remain, they are fixed, or at least they're trying to be Krishna conscious and they're dedicated to that. They're not just running off and, you know, just breaking all the principles. You know, they some difficulty arose, but actually they're really trying to recover their position. Then Krishna says, sadur eva. Yes, Putana was asadvi, but here Krishna is saying, sadur eva. Eva means definitely. Definitely a sadhu, definitely a saintly person. And you may have heard about Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on that verse, chapter 9, verse 30. There's a dialogue, he presents a dialogue between Krishna and Arjuna, in which Arjuna is protesting that how can we consider this person a sadhu if he's done some nonsense. And Krishna is insisting, yes, you must, because I say so. And then Krishna... Or Arjuna asks, it's a fairly, you know, it's quite a long conversation actually. And at the end, Arjuna says, well look, I could understand if someone did some sin, a devotee falls down, but then they're trying to get themselves together again, then we might say that, okay, this person is sadhu. But what if they carry on doing that nonsense? And we can't consider them a sadhu, can we? But Krishna says, no, that as long as this person remains engaged in devotional service, like this, the main quality, Swarup Lakshana, remains attached to me, to Krishna, then Krishna says, such a devotee lamenting that I'm like a black sheep amongst the devotees, and I have this bad habit, I can't get free of it, I can't get free of it, but still I'm going to continue in devotional service. I'll still continue. Then Krishna tells Arjuna that I personally accept the sinful reactions of that person, of that devotee. I take them on my head. And in due course of time, through that regret and repentance, the devotee becomes purified. But in the meantime, I carry that devotee. I carry that devotee and I take his reactions. So this is Krishna's explanation of Bhagavad Gita, which is carrying on from what we discussed earlier. So let's go on now to the last one, some case histories. There are many case histories. We mentioned Ambarish Maharaj with Devasa Muni. That was a case history. I'm sure you can think of some others. Can you think of any really interesting, heavy blasphemy, offense, Vaishnava aparad cases from our scriptures? How about Jagaya Madai? That's pretty heavy. Have you heard of Chapal Gopal? Have you heard of Chapal Gopal? He was pretty heavy. Well, actually, he wasn't that heavy, in a sense. What happened with Chapal Gopal? He's mentioned in Chaitanya Charitamrita and in more detail in Chaitanya Bhagavat. Chapal Gopal, he tried to... Someone suggesting something? No? He tried to embarrass Srivast Thakur, who was a leading Vaishnava, by putting outside his door the paraphernalia for worshipping Durga. Not just Durga, but Chandi, who's a particular form of Durga who's worshipped with meat and liquor. She's a pretty heavy form of Durga. So he left these things outside Srivast Thakur's door. And, you know, along with things like red hibiscus. You know about that? We don't offer red hibiscus to Krishna. It's only for Durga. Patchouli. You know what is patchouli? It's used by Lord Shiva. It's not used by Vaishnavas. All these things. And Srivast Thakur walked out. Actually, some people saw. And they came and knocked on Srivast Thakur's door and said, look, what's this? And Srivast Thakur, of course, it was nothing to do with him. But he said, oh, so now you've found out what I'm like. He didn't say, oh, it wasn't me. I've been framed. No. He said, well, now you know what I'm like. So anyway, the person who done it was Chapal Gopal. That's a very funny name, because Chapal means shoe. So Gopal the shoe, or shoes Gopal, something like that. So it was Chapal Gopal. He was trying to embarrass Srivast Thakur. So you know what happened to Chapal Gopal? He got leprosy as a result of that offense. He got leprosy. And his body was falling to pieces, literally, sort of dissolving. And he was in most horrible suffering condition. So what he did a good thing. He approached Lord Chaitanya. He previously was one of the people who had been mocking Lord Chaitanya. But he approached Lord Chaitanya. And let me just read it, because it's pretty effective. So, suddenly a leper appeared in the assembly and came before the Lord. He threw himself on the ground like a stick, groaning in pain. Then, getting up, he lifted his arms high and began to wail loudly. He cried, O merciful Lord, you have risen like the sun on this earth, only to dissipate the sufferings of this material life. Your compassionate nature is always moved by the distress of others, and so I have come to you. I'm burning in the pain of leprosy. Kindly tell me how I can be relieved of this. So you know what Lord Chaitanya said? Do you think he said, oh yeah, I'm really, it's such a shame. Yes, let me call a doctor. I'll help you, certainly. Just surrender to me. I'll help you. You think that's what Lord Chaitanya said? I'm afraid not. When the leper had finished speaking, the Lord addressed him angrily with a thundering voice. He said, go! Go away from here. Just seeing you incurs sin. Even if a very pious man sees your face, the whole day will bring him only despair. You're a wretched sinner and an offender of Vaishnavas. Much more suffering is in store for you. You cannot tolerate this pain, you contemptuous rascal. How are you going to live through the sufferings in the Kumbhipaka hell? People in the Kumbhipaka hell are cooked in boiling oil with bodies that don't die, but which feel pain very sensitively. You just touch them and wow, it's a shocking experience. But even if you try and cut their head off, they won't die. Yes, you cut the head off, they're still alive. Yes? Kumbhipaka. A Vaishnava is so pure that just us uttering his name can cleanse the entire universe. Lord Brahma takes pleasure in singing the glories of the Vaishnavas. One easily attains the inconceivable association of the Supreme Lord Krishna simply by serving one Vaishnava. In fact, nothing is superior to the worship of a Vaishnava. Then Lord Chaitanya quotes Srimad Bhagavatam, Lord Krishna again addressing Uddhava, 11, 14, 15. My dear Uddhava, neither Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, Lord Sankarshan, the goddess of fortune, nor indeed my own self are as dear to me as you are. There's significance in the mentioning of those particular people. Lord Brahma is the son of the Lord. Lord Shiva is his partial expansion. Lord Sankarshan, Balaram, is his brother. And Lakshmi is his wife. None of them are as dear to Krishna as Uddhava or as a devotee. So anyone who offends a Vaishnava and criticizes him has to suffer terrible consequences life after life. A person's piety, education, and austerity are rendered useless by criticizing a Vaishnava. Lord Krishna even refuses to accept worship from that person, even if he is a Vaishnava. Mother Earth feels blessed when a Vaishnava dances on her. Just the very sight of a Vaishnava destroys nescience and sin in every direction. And when dancing, if he lifts his arms to the sky, he waves away all ill fortune in the heavenly abodes. Put your hands up and say, Hare Krishna! How merciful of you. You just waved away all ill fortune in the heavenly abodes. Such an elevated devotee is Srivas Thakur, and you are so demonic that you have offended him. Your leprosy is just a mere reminder of your offense. The actual punishment is yet to come, to be meted out by Yamaraj in 8,400,000 species of life. Therefore, I do not even want to see you, and I'm not the one to deliver you. That's pretty heavy. Because this man, you know, he's suffering so badly. His body is literally melting. His fingers, just every day a little bit goes. And his whole body, everything, was melting away with leprosy. And like, leprosy is a disease of heat in Ayurvedic terms. Heat. The body the heating system of the body becomes too high, so the body starts melting. So his body was just melting away. The Lord Chaitanya took it pretty heavily. So then Chapal Gopal replied with utmost humility and meekness, holding a straw in his teeth. He prayed, "In my ignorance, I have destroyed myself. Delirious with the material disease, I have grievously criticized and offended a Vaishnava." Anyway, then he goes on, basically. It's interesting. "For this heinous act, I have rightly deserved my painful due. Now, my Lord, please think of my deliverance." So then, the Lord replied, "Leprosy for an offender is just his first punishment. It is only the beginning. The worst is yet to come. Yamaraj has 8,400,000 types of excruciating punishments waiting for the offenders. You should go right away to Srivas Pandit and throw yourself at his feet." Yeah. So he did that. And Srivas Pandit forgave him immediately, and he became all right immediately. He became fine, and he became one of the devotees. He joined Lord Chaitanya's party. And the author, Vrindavan Das Thakur, makes a very interesting comment at the end. "If one sees two Vaishnavas quarreling, then one should never think that something is amiss, or that there is enmity and malice between them. Such quarreling is in fact pleasing to the Lord and is transcendental. The arguments and abuses exchanged between Rukmini Devi and Satyabhama Devi, although sounding like serious fights, are factually not so, because they are forever united in their service to their common Lord and Master. There is no enmity between Vaishnavas. The Supreme Lord himself induces these fights due to his frolicsome nature. But if anyone foolishly sides with one Vaishnava against another, then he is doomed due to offending a Vaishnava. The Vaishnavas are the extensions of the Lord's limbs. So how can one benefit by serving him with one hand and inflicting pain on him with the other? One who has developed such vision becomes steady in devotional service. One who understands that Lord Krishna and his devotees are non-different, and with this knowledge serves the Lord, can easily cross the ocean of nescience. One who glorifies, hears, and understands these transcendental subject matters can always avoid Vaishnava aparad." So, yes, an example of how the Lord takes it so extremely seriously. Very seriously. You know, who would not be compassionate on a poor leper? Yeah. But the Lord took it so heavily. I want to talk also about Jagai and Madhai, but we've run out of time, so we can talk a bit about them tomorrow. Any comments or questions so far? Are you meant to speak into a microphone? Is he meant to speak into a microphone?
We are talking about Sarva Lakshana. So would and the attachment that a devotee has for Krishna, which is like one of the main principal qualities, for us to, you know, not offend him. Would Krishna then reciprocate according to that degree of attachment? Or how do we identify, you know, if you try to correct someone or help someone, well, I'm attached to Krishna, man, you might not, you know, just something more, you know, what intent would be of that attachment?
Yes, okay, well, that's a good question. We started off right at the beginning by saying that, you know, you can't offend any devotee, even if they're you know, someone who's right at the very beginning stages and has many problems. But at the same time, Krishna, being a person, he appreciates more some devotees than others. Like, we just read that verse 11, 14, 15, where Krishna tells Uddhava that neither Lord Brahma, who's a devotee, or Lord Shiva, or Lord Balaram, or Lakshmi, they're all devotees. They're as dear to me as you. And then the gopis, or the inhabitants of Vrindavan, and ultimately the gopis, are the most dear of all. And Krishna, yes, Krishna will reciprocate, I mean, your reactions for offending a Vaishnava may vary according to the advancement of the devotee. Yeah, like Chapal Gopal, he sort of played a practical joke, you could say, on Srivasa Thakura. It's not a big thing, really, in a certain sense. But Krishna took it so seriously. Oh, so very seriously. Yeah, so that's an example. There are many different... Actually, you could have a course just on the subject of Vaishnava Parada, in fact. So we're just kind of touching on a few important points. But there are different... Here we've got four types of blasphemy. But there's blasphemy on three different levels. Blasphemy within the mind, blasphemy which is verbally expressed, and blasphemy which is physically expressed. And we're going to mention a little bit about Bhrigu Muni, if we have time, who experimented with those three. So, you know, if you think blasphemously about a devotee, then it may happen that you will get a reaction within your mind. Hmm. There's a very interesting story about Rupa Goswami, who, in Bhakti Ratnakara, who unintentionally, actually didn't commit an offense. There was no fault. But someone felt offended by him within his mind. That Rupa Goswami was meditating on Radha and Krishna's pastimes, and he was in them, in his transcendental body, and externally, you know, he was just not conscious. So in this pastime, what happened was, if I remember correctly, that Radharani was trying to decorate herself. It's the pastime connected with Sringarbhat in Vrindavan town. Radharani is trying to decorate herself secretly without Krishna seeing. But Krishna is sneaking up behind her. And Krishna, some of the Manjaris are decorating Krishna's hair, but Krishna tells them just, you know, one side, and he steps in. And he is now decorating Radharani's hair. And Radharani thinks it's one of the gopis. So, you know, this is going on. And then she picks up a mirror and sees, there's Krishna, and laughs, and everyone laughs. And Rupa Goswami, who's Rupa Manjari, the head of the Manjaris, he or she laughed. And Rupa Goswami's external body laughed. Yeah. And there was one elderly Vaishnava who was kind of, you know, they're very old, and his body was not very strong, and he's like hunched back sort of, and, you know, awkward, very awkward type of bodily condition. So he was walking along, and he saw there's Rupa Goswami, he looked up, and then suddenly he saw there's Rupa Goswami looking straight at me and laughing at me. And he thought, wow, what have I done? And he got into tremendous anxiety. Actually, there was no offense. There was no offense on Rupa Goswami's part. There's no question of someone like that committing an offense. But the thing is that that devotee felt anxiety within the mind. Yeah. So it was like that. And Rupa Goswami, suddenly he came out of his meditation and he couldn't understand, why is my meditation broken? So then he again sat down, he was trying to go into his meditation, and he couldn't. And he tried, but he couldn't re-enter that meditation. And then he got into anxiety. Yeah. He got into anxiety. Now, that elderly Vaishnava, he, you know, there's Rupa Goswami.
The universes look like they're going to bounce off his head and just be lost. That would have been a problem. But they were trying to restrain him, but they couldn't restrain him. He was just so overwhelmed in ecstasy. But fortunately, the universes didn't get lost. Anyway, then the next chapter is about the prayers of Madhai. The prayers of Madhai. Madhai, Jagai Madhai, they got love of God, and everything was forgiven, but, and they were simply chanting and dancing in ecstasy and going everywhere with Lord Chaitanya. But they would, from time to time, they would remember that, wow, what we did, what we did. And particularly Madhai, who was the actual one who attacked Lord Chinanda, he would remember what I did, and it would become too much. And he would just collapse, just crying and lamenting. And it came to such a point that he was constantly in this state, just constantly crying and lamenting, that I attacked Lord Chinanda. What sort of demon am I? So then one day he met Lord Chinanda, and he appealed to him for forgiveness. He'd already done that, but, you know, again, like, more deeply. So there are some prayers there, Madhai's prayers, and I thought I could just read them. There is a benediction. Let me just see. Oh yeah, okay. Lord Vichananda says, now this is just to encourage you to stay awake. Is anyone asleep? If you're asleep, yes? Put your hand up if you're asleep. So this is to encourage you to stay awake. He says, Lord Vichananda says, that anyone who hears your wonderful and devotional prayers to me will certainly develop loving attachment to my lotus feet. Okay, that is the benediction from Lord Nityananda. And it's, in other words, it's true. So if you hear nicely Madhai's prayers, then according to Lord Nityananda, you'll develop loving attachment to his lotus feet. Is that okay? Is that all right? Good. So let's listen then. Madhai's prayers. It's not so long, we'll just take 2 or 3 minutes. O Lord, the whole cosmic manifestation is resting on your chest. Your body is very soft and gives Krishna great pleasure when you expand yourself as his bed, as Ananta Shesh, and he lies on you. But I am so monstrous and sinful that I hurt the same transcendental body of yours. Who is more wretched than I am? Your transcendental form is constantly worshipped by Lord Shiva, accompanied by his beautiful consort Parvati and other young maidens. Simply by remembering your form, one is freed from all bondage. And the same spiritual body was bleeding due to my misdeeds. Chitraketu, the famous emperor, was living happily by worshipping you and was counted amongst the foremost Vaishnava devotees. That same form that is worshipped by the entire universe was brutally hit by me, the lowest of sinners. The sages of Naimisharanya forest, headed by Shonaka, became freed from all material entanglement by meditating upon your form. In your expansion as Lakshman, you were wounded by Indrajit, the son of Ravan, and for this you killed him. Similarly, the gorilla demon Dwivida also met a premature death at your hands, because he was harassing you. The mighty Jarasandha was also vanquished by you for being inimical to you. I'm so foolish that I did not understand what is beneficial for me, and so I inflicted pain upon your transcendental form. I do not know then the consequences for such an act. When Rukmi, Krishna's brother-in-law, simply insulted you, you took his life. Romaharshana Suta was blessed with a long life by the sages of Naimasharanya, but when he failed to give you proper respect, you slew him. So what do I deserve? King Duryodhana and his entire dynasty was almost exterminated just for disobeying your words. They were spared by good fortune because of the presence of elevated devotees like Kunti, Bhishma, Yudhisthira and Arjuna. When one's very life is at stake just by a little disrespectful attitude towards you, like Romaharshana Suta, he just wouldn't stand up. That's all. That's all he did. He just wouldn't stand up when Lord Balaram entered the assembly. And Rukmi, he just insulted Lord Balaram. What sort of kshatriya are you? You should be out there herding your cows. That's more suitable for you. So just some silly little insult. And they lost their lives. So when one's very life is at stake just by a little disrespectful attitude towards you, then to what depths of depravity and hellishness must I enter for my heinous act? Speaking like this, Madhai fell to the ground, clutching the Lord's lotus feet to his heart. Madhai continued to pray, "The shelter of these lotus feet can save anyone from the endless cycle of rebirth. You have appeared simply to deliver the most fallen. So my dear Lord, kindly protect this fallen soul surrendered to you, for you are my life and soul and most treasured goal." You are the most precious jewel of all the Vaishnava devotees. You are completely free from anger, always submerged in the highest state of blissfulness. You are always inclined to forgive those who have surrendered to you. I am the most atrocious beast and offender. So kindly forgive me, Lord, for all my offenses. Now I read that. I mean, among other things, there's the benediction. Did you listen carefully to that? Did any of you fall asleep? No, I hope not. Because if you listen carefully, then you get this benediction of attaining loving attachment to Lord Nityananda's feet. But I also read that because another part, concluding part of this discussion about offending Vaishnavas, blaspheming Vaishnavas, is what to do if you do it. Yeah. And what you do if you do it is you do like this. Something like this. Yeah. You have to humbly, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakura actually describes very nicely what you should do. It says, if by chance you happen to commit this offense, you should be repentant, recognizing your own low nature and having committed this offense. In the same way that a person who has been burned by fire seeks relief, one should nullify the offense by lamenting, resolving to come before the Vaishnava fall at his feet and satisfy him by offering obeisances and praises and respect. If the Vaishnav is not satisfied, you should remain ready to comply with his every wish. Become his personal servant, actually. If the offense is so great that the Vaishnav's anger does not die, then in great remorse, thinking yourself most unfortunate and bound for hell because of your offense, you should give up everything else and take shelter of continuous Nam Sankirtan. By the great power of Nam Kirtan, certainly in time, you'll be delivered from your offense. But if you, reluctant to put yourself in a humble position by offering repeated respects and service to the Vaishnav that you have offended, if you justify yourself by arguing that simply taking shelter of the name is sufficient for the deliverance from this offense, then you become guilty of further offense. So you can see how Madai so nicely prayed to Lord Nityananda. So we have to be able to feel it like that. We have to become sensitive in our Krishna consciousness to these things. It's very, very important not to be callous and sort of, the don't care type of attitude. So it's very, very important, this mood of repentance and regret. And then if you happen to be offended, then of course a good attitude is that even if someone comes up to you and tells you something really horrible, that you are, you know, a ... exclamation mark, star, further exclamation mark, and various other sort of expletive symbols. In other words, if they really tell it to you as they may think it is, then how should you respond? Well, if you think that you are the most fallen, or at least, you know, fairly well situated in that group, then you might well consider that actually this person is criticizing me for being, you know, a lousy devotee, and, you know, you're not serious and all this, something like that. You could think that, well, this devotee is practically praising me. They don't even know how rotten I am. They're telling me I'm a lousy devotee, but I'm not a devotee, actually. So they've been too merciful to me. So Lord Nityananda's reply is very nice as a type of example. Of course, he's speaking in his own mood. He's the Supreme Lord. But it's also a very nice example for the type of mood one should have if one feels offended somehow, if it happens. Lord Nityananda smiled, hearing the loving prayers offered to him, and said, "Get up. Arise, O Madai. You are my servitor. I now reside within your body. Is the father disturbed if his little child hits him? I've accepted your beating in this parental mood. What is more important is that anyone who hears your wonderful devotional prayers to me will certainly develop loving attachment to my lotus feet." So this is very nice. "You are the recipient of my Lord's mercy. Therefore you are free from all blame. Whoever worships my Lord Chaitanya becomes most dear to me, and I offer him my protection eternally. If anyone disregards Lord Chaitanya, but worships me and sings my glories, he will suffer pain birth after birth." Lord Nityananda then embraced Madai and took away all his misery. So, it's just a brief part of it actually, there's a lot more to it. But just see how nice
Lord Nityananda's Buddhas, he is not thinking, you know, in that haughty, arrogant type of way that, how dare you offend such a person as me? I have so many good qualities and you said I'm a nonsense. What on earth are you? Not like that. Last thing I'll mention as far as blaspheming Vaishnavas is concerned is about the story of Bhrigu Muni. And mainly it's interesting, well, it's interesting in a number of ways. Mainly it's interesting, anyway, we'll tell you about that when we get there. He is a person who decided to do an experiment to do with offenses. He decided to commit offenses to test people and see how they reacted to being offended, to get more of an understanding of where those people were at. And the people he chose to offend were first of all Lord Brahma, then Lord Shiva, then Lord Vishnu. So he was really taking a chance. they're the wrong people to offend. Anyone's the wrong person, but they're really the wrong people. Because there was a debate about who is the most pure, Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, or Lord Vishnu. So he said, I'll go and find out. So his plan was to offend them and see how they reacted. So first of all, he went and offended his father, Lord Brahma, the head of our Sampradaya, who happens to be his father. And he offended him in a certain way. It was a mental offense. We mentioned yesterday there's mental, vocal, and bodily offenses. So he went to see his father, Lord Brahma, and Lord Brahma came forward to greet him. And the traditional method when you meet your parents is you bow down. Do you bow down when you meet your parents in the morning? Do you? You don't. Oh. Neither did Bhrigu Muni. And you know what his father was going to do? His father was going to kill him for this disrespect. Yes. When Brahmananda, if you've heard of Brahmananda, one of the oldest devotees, first went home to see his mother after having become a devotee and shaved his head and all that sort of thing. He asked Prabhupada, what should I do? Prabhupada said, first thing is you bow down and touch your feet. So he did that. And she, being a New York Mataji, she didn't know what to make of that at all. And she just became too astonished. But anyway, this is the traditional process, and Lord Brahma was going to kill him for not doing it. But his wife, Saraswati, said, no, he's your son, forgive him, it's just a mistake. So he forgave him. So then he went off to see his brother, Lord Shiva. And when Lord Shiva approached him very affectionately to embrace him out of brotherly affection, Bhrigu Muni jumped back, said, don't you touch me. Look at you, you're filthy. Look at me, you've got ashes of dead cremated bodies all over your body. It's filthy. And look, you've got that snake around your neck. Horrible creature. Get away. Don't come near me and you associate with all these hobgoblins and people like that. Poof, you just stay away. So Lord Shiva was extremely offended, took up his trident to kill his brother, but Parvati intervened and said, he's your brother, you know, he got a little carried away, give him a chance. So he was saved. It's a very dangerous business, offending people like that. So, first of all, it was mental, with Lord Brahma. Now it was verbal. He expressed some certain offensive words to his brother, Shiva. So then he went on to Lord Vishnu. And you know what he did? He walked in, and there was Lord Vishnu reclining on an antashesh, and there was Lakshmi Devi massaging Lord Vishnu's lotus feet. and Lord Vishnu's lying there. So Bhrigu Muni just walked in and walked right up to him and kicked him in the chest. Kicked him. And naturally, Lord Vishnu, you know, he just was shocked. He got up. And you know what he did? Did he call for his Sudarshan Chakra, Narayan, Dwar, the ultimate cold weapon? Curse him? Call on Jayan Vijay? No. He said, oh, my dear Bhrigu Muni, my dear Brahman, sage, I'm so sorry to have gotten your way. I hope you didn't hurt your lotus foot on my soft chest, on my hard chest. I'm so sorry. But, actually, I consider myself so fortunate that you've done this. Your lotus foot has touched my chest. So now, all the goddesses of fortune now never leave me, because the dust from your feet is now on my chest. So I'm so fortunate. Thank you very much. That's a pretty wonderful type of response. But this is generally the mood. As devotees, we are very sensitive to avoid offending other devotees. But if apparently we become offended or something happens like that, it may look like that, then we should try and have this sort of attitude. Very important. Not that, yes, you offended me. You know, in a sense, if you feel that, oh, you offended me, she, he offended me, and they did something bad, and, you know, something should be done about it. These types of thoughts. What it indicates is that we have a rather inflated view of ourselves. We think that me, look at me, I'm important. Oh, I'm a very important person. And if someone offends me, then automatically they have done something very bad. Something wrong. It's wrong because I'm so good. And if you offend someone who's good, then that's wrong. These people, they're wrong, so that means I'm very good. Isn't it? I'm so good. But that's not our idea. Our idea is Trinada Pisanichena, Tarora Pisahishnina, Amanina, Manadena, Kirtaniya Sadahari. That one should chant the holy names of the Lord in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself lower than a straw in the street. One should be more tolerant than a tree, devoid of all sense of false prestige, and ready to offer all respects to others. And in such a state of mind, one can chant the holy names of the Lord constantly. And unless one is in that state of mind, one will not be able to chant the holy names of the Lord constantly. And one will get into Maya, sometimes at least. Yeah. One should be very humble, lower than the straw in the street. The straw in the street, you can't get any lower. People are walking on the straw in the street all the time. And what is the straw in the street doing? Is it getting up and saying, you know, how dare you? No, it's simply taking that. And more tolerant than a tree, that people, the tree is standing there for a long time, it's hot, it's cold, it's wet, different times of the year. The tree is just standing there. And finally, in many cases, finally, the people come along and cut the tree down. And while they're in the process of cutting the tree, they may pick some fruit from the tree to give themselves energy so they can cut the tree more nicely. And while they're cutting the tree will be giving them shade so they can cut the tree in comfort. So this is what it means, more tolerant than a tree. How tolerant is that? Yeah. And at the same time, not only that, always ready to offer all respects to others. Not just tolerant, you know, putting up with a lot, but at the same time ready to offer all respects to others. In this state of mind, one can chant the holy names of the Lord constantly. And in no other state of mind can one chant the holy names constantly. So in our test, we want you to be able to give a couple of examples of real Maha Aparadis and a little realization, just like a one-sentence realization about two. Is that okay? And that is basically what we want to discuss about the first offense. And I think we'll take a little break now, and we'll come back 10 or 15 minutes and talk about the next offense or couple of offenses. Srila Prabhupada Kirtan. I heard about it, and I don't expect that any of you really have a problem with it, worshipping demigods. Anyway, we hope not. Sometimes people do. Sometimes, I mean, certainly in that transitional period for Hindu people, when they go from being Hindu people to being devotees, then this question will certainly arise. But we, as far as we understand, all of you are basically, firmly situated as devotees. So we don't, in other words, we don't really expect this offense to occur so much or to be as much of a danger as some of the others, like particularly offending Vaishnavas. That's really something very relevant and touchy. But here then, in our overview book, we have given some explanation. First of all, we've quoted from the Nectar of Devotion, which explains, we're just taken straight out actually of Nectar of Devotion. There are five qualities. Well, there are, first of all, 55 qualities, which Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma have in common with Krishna and Lord Narayana, Krishna and his immediate expansions. 55. Then, there's another five, as we have stated here, which Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, and not to speak of any of the other demigods, they're the biggest demigods. So even Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma, they don't have. They don't have inconceivable potency. They don't have uncountable universes coming from their bodies. They're not the original source of any incarnations. They don't give salvation. They can't give salvation. They don't even have it themselves necessarily. So they can't give salvation to enemies they kill. And they don't generally attract liberated souls. Generally they're not liberated themselves, or at least they're kind of working on being liberated. They're certainly not permanently liberated like Krishna. Now we've turned, are these lights on up here over you ladies? You seem to be more in darkness than you were. You're meant to be enlightening you. What's going on? I don't know what happened there, if we've turned out the lights off. Is it darker? It is darker. Strange. Anyway, I don't know. Our man was playing about with things there. Maybe he didn't learn anything. Okay, so Lord Narayana, he has these qualities. And all the other incarnations, expansions, and so on, Vaikuntha deities, they all have these extra five qualities. Very practical things, you know, inconceivable potency. Universes coming from their bodies. At least they have that potential. They are the source of incarnations. They can give salvation, and they can attract liberated souls because they're permanently liberated. They're uncontaminatable. They cannot fall down, even if they want to. So, but then even beyond that, Krishna himself, Krishna specifically, has four more, which no one else has, although Lord Balaram does. So, he performs wonderful varieties of pastimes, especially his childhood pastimes. Don't make a mistake about this childhood pastimes business. It means his Vrindavan pastimes. Yeah. It includes all the pastimes in Vrindavan. It's not just when he's a little baby with Mother Yashoda. Yeah. It's not just that. It's all his childhood, boyhood, and youthful pastimes before he goes to Mathura and becomes like a prince. So they're so wonderful. Those pastimes are so amazing that even the pastimes of other forms of the Lord cannot compare. Then he's surrounded by devotees endowed with wonderful love of God. Of course, all the Narayan forms, they're also surrounded by devotees who have a degree of love of God that should make